when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, welcome everybody to episode 36. We're going to cover riots, roadblocks, checkpoints, and curfews. And our guest is a police officer, Keegan Williams, who has a lot of experience in these sorts of things. He's a former special operations guy, dealt with checkpoints and things back in a country he used to operate in. And on the police side, when he came back, he's got some SWAT experience. He teaches tactics. He's on the civil disturbance unit, which is the riot squad. Gleaned a lot of information from that. He has a lot of background on gangs, which we covered a couple weeks ago with Officer Mack, but Officer Williams, Deputy Williams, pardon me, can go ahead and chime in on gangs too, because that's a very, very important topic. And another thing Deputy Williams does is a lot of training for his department. So these are all backgrounds and experiences that he has that I think are going to make this a really good show, because obviously you're going to need to deal with riots, roadblocks, checkpoints, and curfews when the collapse hits. But before we get into that, Shelby, what's next on our top 100 things that go first?
So welcome, everyone, to Prepping 2.0. The list that we always refer to every week, real quick, you can get to it at prepping2-0.com. Lower right-hand corner, top 100 things that disappear in a collapse, put together by those who survived the Bosnian collapse. We're on number 25. This one kind of cracks me up a little bit, but kind of does and doesn't. Number 25, thermal underwear, tops and bottoms. Folks, if you're going to buy thermal underwear, buy them top and a bottom, because it makes sense, or buy a one-piecer. This is important because I think about when I was a kid, I had thermal underwear because we wore it when we would go camping and go fishing and all of that, because we lived in a cold climate. But that is so much more controlled these days with whatever, all the little comforts that we have. I think we forget sometimes how crucial these sorts of things are, having layered clothing. And you don't see it as much. So the other thing I'll point out to you is that here we are, kind of beginning of summer, beginning. This is when you're going to find it on clearance somewhere in the back bin at like your sporting goods store. This is the clearance time. The other time is kind of around Christmas time when it's kind of on sale. This is the better time though of year. But you have a thought on this too, Glenn.
Yeah, one of the things about Prepping 2.0 that we often talk about is the second level of prepping, the next stage, involves looking at the new technology that's come out in the 10 or so years since a lot of us started prepping 1.0, like when Obama got elected, 2009 or so. Got elected in 2008. I know, horse shackers, go ahead and put your hands down. Yes, we know the election was in 2008. The inauguration was in 2009. Anyway, so about 10 years. Well, thermal underwear has come a long way. Now there's merino wool, merino, M-E-R-I-N-O, I believe, that is really common. It's out there, and the prices have come down. It's really, really, really good stuff. And so, for example, at Costco, during the season in which they sell this stuff that Shelby was mentioning, you can get a really nice set, tops and bottoms, of merino wool thermal underwear for, I don't know, 20, 30 bucks, and you can't go wrong. So like so many other things, like guns and ammunition and food, freeze dryers, and other things, the availability has never been higher. The prices have never been lower. Now's the time to get it. The need has never been higher because of what we think will unfold in a year or two, probably. So anyway, now's the time to get the thermal underwear. You can't go wrong with it. And, you know, it's one of those other things that if nothing bad happens, at least you're going to be warm and comfortable. Because if you're listening to this show, you probably just don't sit in your air-conditioned suburban house 365 days a year. You probably go out and do actual, you know, fun stuff. So anyway, there's that. Okay, well, Shelby, what's in the merch shack?
Glad you asked. Many of our listeners have been so awesome and being patient with it, as I keep saying in these last few weeks, pretty soon if we'll have t-shirts and hoodies, the sizes will be updated. So if you go to either of our websites, 299days.com or agreatstate.com, both of them have a shop tab. Just click on it, takes you to the same place. You can find our t-shirts and hoodies that have the iconic I Miss America spray painted type of logo on it. So those have all been updated. So if you've been patiently awaiting those are updated. The other cool thing.
Did you say patiently awaiting?
I did. I meant to do that. Not really. But we have a brand new sticker. We're kind of excited about it. And we've like plastered them all over all of our favorite things. It's called, it just is kind of that same style of spray painted kind of look. And it just is patiently awaiting the collapse, because those of us who are sitting in the room and those of us who are listening are kind of patiently awaiting for the collapse. And so kind of a fun sticker. It's a high quality kind of plastic. It's not just something that'll come off really easy. We've put it on a couple of mugs and things like that. And you jump in if you want to say anything about them before I go on.
Yeah, what we're doing is something cool. And we did this with I Miss America patches and things in the past. And yes, we're working on adding those sorts of things to the merch line. We kind of do it one at a time. We have like a couple jobs and kids and stuff like that, so we don't get to roll things out as quickly as we'd like. However, what we did in the past was, you know, show me, put up on Facebook or send me an email with a picture of you with your patch or your sticker. And what we're going to do is we're going to send you some. So here's what you do. Get yourself a patiently awaiting the collapse sticker and then put it on something, preferably something cool. I mean, put it on whatever. I think gun safes are pretty cool things to put them on, or coffee mugs or something. I mean, you could put them on your dog. I mean, you could do that. No, Shelby says no. That's cruelty to animals, she says. Okay. And then you take that picture, send us an email with the picture and your address, and we will send you some more stickers for free, because we're just happy that you're out there getting the word out. So get a sticker, take a picture, send us your address, get more stickers for free. How cool is that?
Well, and I'll throw this out there, too. If y'all like this as much as we kind of do, if you think it's a cool thing, and this is the rolling out thing, if you like it, we'll start working on putting it together on a T-shirt, because I think that would I do think it would be a cool T-shirt. So there you go. So the next thing we want to talk about is the Preparedness Expo. Really quick, coming up on September 21st and 22nd, 2019, grab a pen, write that down. You and I have talked quite a bit about the expo that we went to in Sandpoint, Idaho. Back in September, we went back at Sandpoint. You'll hear us talk very lovingly about that. And back then, it was called the Inland Northwest Preparedness Expo. It's kind of long. They've changed the name to Panhandle Preparedness Expo. Same expo, same great place, Sandpoint, Idaho. 2-day event. It's a Saturday and Sunday from 9 to 5. Love it if all of you who listen to us in that area would come join us. I believe we're speakers. So yeah, this is one of the three expos that we go to every year. Looking forward to doing it. So put it on your calendar. The other cool thing that happens there is that it's at the Bonner County Fairgrounds. There's a campground there. So for a few dollars a night, not a big hotel bill, but for a few dollars a night, you can camp out, and you'll be camping with us as well as a great group of other folks that are like-minded in preparedness, prepared in that sort of thing. So it's a fun time. It's kind of like, you know, the Woodstock of preparedness expos.
Without all the filthy hippies.
And pot.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
No. So filthy hippies are not fun. So, and what a lot of people do with the Panhandle Preparedness Expo being in sort of mid-September, a lot of people I've talked to, they make it their family's last camping trip, RV trip, whatever you are, car trip, whatever it is, of the summer. It's kind of like, for a lot of people, Labor Day is the end of the summer season, but we're much hardier and cooler people. So for us, it's a little bit later because we're kind of tougher. We just kind of are tougher. So come on out September 21st, 22nd, Sandpoint, Idaho. More information, just Google. Get on the Googles, as the kids say.
Get on the Googles.
Panhandle Preparedness Expo. Well, thank you, Shelby. Now I'd like to introduce our guest, Deputy Keegan Williams, and I'd like him to say hi and tell everybody a little bit about his background.
Hello, Glenn and Shelby. Glad to be on your show. First time I've ever been interviewed for something like this. A little bit about myself. Not born in the state of Washington. Joined the military when I was a kid. Got stationed over here, spent some time in special operations here on back then Fort Lewis, and stayed in for about a decade. Got out, decided to become a cop, and now I work in the Southern Puget Sound as one.
That's right. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you've got a SWAT background, you teach tactics, you're on the civil disturbance unit, know a lot about gangs, and you've done a lot of training. And I tell people that a second time because I want them to understand we didn't just have like some random dude come on the show. Deputy Williams, you know, I know him a little bit and I know his background, and I thought he would really be able to provide some information.
So, Deputy Williams, question here from Shelby. By the way, mm-hmm. good to talk to you. We've talked before. It's good to talk to you again.
Yes, ma'am.
Very good. So, question for you. This is a topic very near and dear to my heart, and we've had discussions about this. Riots. You've been in law enforcement in them, and you've seen the dirty, nasty stuff that you don't see on the media. And I don't know how to form this into a question, but when I say to you riots, in the current political culture that we live in, what do you want people to know? What can you tell us about them?
Well, they are evolving. We had riots when we were shipping stuff off to overseas. We'd have groups of protesters, and they always start as protesters, right? They'd show up at the train tracks down in South Tacoma or East Tacoma, and they'd block the train tracks, try to make the so they couldn't send strikers or whatever gear they were sending out to get shipped overseas. It always starts as protests. Same thing with up in Seattle during May Day, they would start as protests. And I mean, protesting is fine. It's the criminal element, or the, I should say,
anarchic. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm a lawyer. I'm very
thank
important.
You. Big words, small brain. So it's those type of people. Like back in the day, they called themselves Black Bloc, and they started off in Portland or Salem is where those guys originated from. And they would, the only times you would see them up in Seattle or in Tacoma or wherever there was a protest was during a protest. You'd never see them. They would never be up here. They're not citizens of Washington, or they're not, you know, they don't have any stake at whatsoever in the area where the protests occur. And this was a perfect example of, we had May Day back in, I don't remember what year it was, where they broke a bunch of, or damaged a bunch of buildings, bunch of windows, and that spilled over into Mardi Gras, where the same thing happened, and the kid was killed, where SPD didn't react enough during May Day and overreacted.
That's one of the things I'll be interrupting with acronym stuff for folks.
Sorry.
Yes,
Seattle PD. Didn't react enough during May Day and then overreacted during Mardi Gras, or not enough in Mardi Gras and overreacted in May Day. And to back up even further, it was even WTO back when we had that up in Seattle, where they overreacted. In that movie that I'm sure you know about, do you know what I'm talking about? So
I don't get out much. I don't have a life, so.
Right. But riots. So everything starts as a protest, and then you'll have the criminal element or the anarchy element of a protest, where they start throwing Ziploc bags full of crap, or Ziploc bags full of urine, or they'll throw, like 2 years ago in Seattle, a buddy of mine was hit in the face with a brick, and it was a solid piece of concrete that hit him in the face, broke his helmet and his shield, and cracked his orbital bone. But that's the stuff you don't hear or see on the news. I'll bet they didn't report that a couple years ago they threw Molotov cocktails, and some people will say you hear some officers say, well, that's deadly force. If someone throws a Molotov cocktail at me, I have that's deadly force. He's trying to kill me. I could technically burn alive, right? Thus would be the response would be to use deadly force to save myself or even other protesters' lives. And then you have the civilian side will say, well, that's excessive force. Well, sure, when you're not having Molotov cocktails thrown at you, that's excessive, but.
Or brick to the head, that's deadly force, too. I mean, you can kill somebody doing that. So, okay, there's, I have a couple questions out of that, and we have like a bunch of things we want to ask you about.
Yeah.
So you know me well enough to know that I pay close attention. I've been a little too close many times to the riots that happen in Portland. And I love how you're saying that it always starts out as a rally or a protest and, you know, bring the kids and family. And then it turns, and all that is cover for the violence that happens.
It is.
And I feel sorry for those people who live in these areas and they're like, hey, I'm just going to go down to the local coffee store. And they get caught up and they're shocked and they see awful things and sometimes they get hurt. But you mentioned, and I've known this for a long time, but I'd love it if you talk about it. These people are not residents of Seattle, Portland, Sanford, whatever it is. And they go up and down the left West Coast. And so, and let me just say this, for those of you in the other parts of the country listening to this, we're talking about this because this is growing. These things are now growing into Denver, into Chicago, into Baltimore for sure. This is a movement. This isn't just contained to this part of the country. So this is more a cautionary tale for you. So talking about these people, they travel, at least here on the West Coast, they travel up and down the I-5. Where are they from and who's behind them? Do you know?
I don't know who's behind them. I mean, we can speculate all day long that special interest groups pay for these individuals move up and down the coast, but
ding, 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 ding. Correct. Please continue.
But it's funny that you said that because I was listening to a podcast you guys recommended. And it's, I can't remember the name of it, but regardless, whoever that owns that podcast was interviewing a lady who was in Berkeley who didn't have a job. And she was in between her feminine studies college degree and a job. And
that's shocking that she wouldn't have immediate employment, but please continue.
I was being facetious. But anyway, so she was in between college and job, and there was that big thing that happened at Berkeley where there was protests and all that jazz.
And it's like the burning of Berkeley. Yeah, it was awful.
Yes, yep. So then that's when she gets involved in a protest. So, and not in like involved in it, just watching it. And then she goes to another week, and the next week later, she goes to a meeting regarding protesting. And then she goes to another meeting, another meeting. And then she starts talking about, well, now my job is to go from city to city protesting. And I wish the guy who was interviewing her would have asked, well, where do you get the funds? But that topic was not talked about. So, yeah, that's their full-time job is to go from city to city to city protesting or not necessarily rioting, but they protest. And like I said before, there's nothing wrong. We live in an awesome country where you're allowed to do that. The problem is when you get the protesters who then cross the line into breaking the law. And mind you, blocking the road, is that a big deal? Is the juice worth the squeeze? I mean, really, you're blocking the road. Okay, so you're going to make some guy or girl trying to get to work or from work to home late or whatever. I get it. I mean, that's just the life we live. Thank God, free country. But the problem is when they start breaking property, assaulting people, then you've crossed the line into now you're infringing on my rights. Now you are. I'm going to have to defend myself, or I'm going to have to call the police to help me. That's the problem I have. I have no problem with protesters. They serve a function sometimes.
Yeah.
Boy, and you were mentioning sort of the paid protester and how that person evolved or devolved into that. And I just suggest to people that they read Shelby's books because she has an extremely good explanation of how regular people who don't have a job and need to basically do stuff that a thug wants them to do in order to maintain their free rent, how they have to go and protest, become professional protesters. And this is in a collapse situation where there's, you were describing a pre-collapse situation, but it's a real thing. I think that there's going to be foot soldiers after the collapse. Well, the beginning of the collapse, there are going to be all these people that don't have any jobs, a lot of homeless people. I mean, you've got 55,000 homeless people in L.A. That's a perfect army, if you will, for saying, hey, we're going to feed you. We're going to let you live in your tent, but you need to go and protest in riots. So that's more on the protest end.
Well, you don't think that's not happening right now? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, there's homeless people in Seattle. There's homeless people in Tacoma and Portland. And you don't think that the people who are paid to protest don't go and say, "Hey, man, I'll give you $100. I know, you know, you don't have any money or anything, but I'll give you $100 just to stand here and just shout with us, or whatever it happens to be, to give you this or that. All I want you to do is stand here and hold this sign and yell." It happens. We see it. I mean,
oh yeah,
you get the.
If it's happening now, it's going to happen even more so as things accelerate.
You know, wow. I was talking about the Black Bloc, about how it formed in Salem and Portland area. That group of anarchists has now turned into Antifa, and I'm sure we'll get into that topic a little bit later.
Well, I was going to go on to the next one, but yeah, talk about that. We have about 3 minutes before the break. So yeah, okay. What can you give us on that? Yeah.
So Antifa, they evolved after the Trump got elected. That's when this group morphed from Black Bloc into Antifa, because now they're fighting the fascists, whatever. But now those guys, have aligned themselves with like eco groups and other special interest groups. And that's all they do now. That's their sole focus, is to, cause chaos. You see in the May Day parade, which is fine. Those guys, every year they walk from point A to point B and they try to get their message out and whatever, but you can watch them. You can watch the actual May Day, parade walkers. And then you'll see these groups of, guys and girls just dressed all in black, covering their faces. The only people who are covering their faces are the Antifa guys. So, anonymity, I guess. I don't know.
Wow. So here's what I think is shocking in that, before we go on to the next. I'll say this too. We're going to unpack quite a bit of this in our after show. So if you are a Patreon supporter or want to be, come join us over there too. But what I think is interesting here is that if you live in Oregon, Salem is it's the capital of Oregon. It's about 40 miles south of Portland, and it's not known for Antifa. It's known for certainly hard left politics and politics and backroom deals and all of that. And it's kind of a sleepy little town. You don't think of it as a birthplace for Antifa.
No, not at all.
Not at all. Right. But that's where you're saying that's where it grew out of. But it also goes to show these, if this were the world I lived in, I would not live in this city that I commit violence in, right? Because it's really easy to go to the city, do what you need to do, hop on a bus and get out. And I think that's part of it. So what I think is important to note here, and we have a couple minutes, well, we have like about a minute, so I'll kind of finish it out here, but it's really easy to go someplace that you give very little regard to. I don't care about a city that I don't live in. I don't care about a place I don't live in. I don't care if I go in and I cause damage and I cause hurt and pain, because I'm just going to go there, do it, and leave. But if I live there and my kids are there and I have roots there and I have a job there and I have friends and family there, I'm not going to do that. So I think Antifa and these sorts of groups and those aligned with them set themselves up to be kind of cold. You know, they're not going to riot and ruin their neighborhood, right? So I think it sets them up to be kind of cold-hearted in that. And I think that's absolutely cynical, and I absolutely think it's sinister, but that's what's happening. And so I'm going to give you like 20 seconds to take us out. Any thoughts on that, anybody?
Yeah, absolutely. So the same thing is like when I was overseas, we would fight guys, the insurgents. And when we would eliminate them, we'd collect their IDs and all that stuff. And they're guys from Syria, Egypt. You're right. It, the anonymity is there. So it's the same thing as a keyboard warrior on the computer. I can type anything I want to and no one can find me. Well, if I live in Salem, I'm going to go cause damage in Seattle. It's right. Not Salem. You know what I mean? You don't crap in your own living room. You know what I mean?
Stay tuned, everyone. We'll catch you on the other side of the break.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
Hi, everyone. Glenn Tate here.
And Shelby Gallagher here. People always ask us whether a particular property would be good for prepping.
Well, luckily, there's someone who does this for a living, and that's Brian at Strategic Landscape Design. He's a bug-out location consultant for a new property or the one you already have.
Strategic Landscape Design shows you how to make your property productive for you now and when the collapse comes. Visit strategiclandscapedesign.com and see all the things Brian can do for you and your property. That's strategiclandscapedesign.com.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, welcome back to the second segment of our show today. We're talking about riots. We'll be talking about a lot of other things like riots. Deputy Williams, I wanted to ask you the question, how do you see the following scenario unfolding? Because this is a scenario a lot of us that are listening, you know, see, and that would be EBT cards, and those are like electronic benefit transfers. It's like welfare, like debit cards, basically welfare money. The EBT cards either get turned off or the benefits are significantly reduced. How do you think people react, and would there be a riot, and how do you see that riot playing out?
Oh, that's a good question. Great topic. So, well, think about it this way. If you guys have three or four kids, and all of a sudden your food budget goes from $300 or $400 or $500 a month down to $100 a month, you're used to buying $500 a month worth of food, and now you can only buy $100 worth of food, and you're supposed to feed yourself, your baby daddy, and three kids. Imagine if it was turned off. It would be pandemonium. You would have all the people that you see that, you know, where I work in East Tacoma, you would see all these apartment complexes and stuff. You would see all those, not all of them, but overall majority of the people who are on Section 8 housing and EBT or you know, government housing and government food, basically. They have no food. What are they supposed to do? Well, look at Katrina. When all the power went out and all the cops went away, it was looting and rioting. Now imagine right now, today, if they shut it off right now, you'd have till the end of June, and then all the food's gone and they can't go get more food. Of course they're going to steal it. I could see myself, let's say me, if I had a wife and kids and there was no food, how am I supposed to feed my family? What am I supposed to do? Of course I'm going to go loot a grocery store.
Well, and I see it as the looting to get the food that you're talking about, which is human nature. And by the way, yeah, look at all the civil disturbances, almost all of them throughout the world. And I'll look at Syria for starters. Mm-hmm. They often start when food prices go up. There's this amazing corollary between food prices going up, a lot of unemployment among young people. And then that sets these things off. And I see two things. I see the stealing of the food for all the reasons you mentioned. And then I also see a political side. Not that these people, you know, have a lot of political thoughts. They're going to be mad. It's going to be rage. It's going to be rage at the awful rich people who aren't, you know, sharing their money anymore, however these people look at it. So I think it's going to be necessity and rage. How do you see the rage playing in this, and how does that affect sort of this toxic cocktail of anger and need and hunger and fear and all of that? How does rage fit in?
Well, think of it like a analogy, I guess would be, think of it like a thunderstorm, right? So people see the storm clouds coming, right? Like, okay, we know this is coming. This is the, because obviously it's not going to be one day that someone's just going to turn the light switch off and there's no more EBT, right? There's going to be political talk. There's going to be news stories. There's going to be this. There's going to be that, right? So they can see the storm clouds coming, right? And then it goes from $500 a month down to $300, down to $200, down to $100. So that now the storm clouds above you, right? And people are getting mad because I'm not getting enough food, or they have to, instead of buying all their chips and candy and pop and all that other crap that I don't want to pay for them. Now they have to really buy the necessities to feed your family. Like, so now they're buying the stuff that's maybe not as sexy or not as cool to eat because it's because we've grown as a society like that. And then it goes from $100 down to $50. Now they really have to skimp, right? Now they're only buying what they can afford, the generic stuff, right? And now they're starting to protest. Now they're starting to, you know, call their congressmen. That would be the normal people. I don't want to say normal. That would be the people who I don't know how to put that, but
the
civilized
people. Yeah, we'll say it for you. We'll say it for you.
So the civilized people, we'd be knocking on the congressman's door. We'd be calling them, but they can't do anything, right? I don't want to say their hands are tied, but they have to go with what Congress says. They can't just, you know, the go against what everybody else in Congress is doing or everybody else in government's doing, right? So then it gets turned off. Then you have these, for an example, here's a perfect example where you had these the ICE issues, right? Where protesters are showing up at these ICE officials' residences. Like, we had one of the ICE officials, one of the top dudes living in Tacoma, in Northeast Tacoma, we had to sit on his house because protesters found out where he lived. I can't remember who released all this information. But they started protesting out their house. And at that point, I think now you've crossed the line from protesting into intimidation and harassing. Imagine if all the EBT guards got shut off or got severely decreased, then you're going to have all these Section 8 housing people who rely on my tax dollars. Now they're going to show up at their houses. Are they going to start breaking windows? Are they going to start assaulting family members? And then if it gets turned off, then it's all, man, that would be the flame that started the fire, wouldn't it?
Well, and I think it's, speaking of flames and fire, I think it's uncontrollable. There aren't too many police officers, especially riot police like you. I mean, there's only, I don't know how many there are, and maybe it's a secret, so I won't say it. There aren't many. And you maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys maybe can control a May Day parade that you know is going to happen because it's on May Day, right? It's on the calendar.
Right.
Plenty of planning all year. But if you've got all this stuff going on everywhere, and by the way, it would be everywhere. Let's not kid ourselves. People on EBT cards and subsidized Section 8 housing, they're not just in like certain parts of a city and certain cities. There's so much welfare and so much Section 8 stuff that it's really sprinkled everywhere. I mean, you've got, look at the numbers. What is it, 40 million people on food stamps? They're not all just in a particular part of a big city. And so this is going to be going on everywhere. And I can think of the town we live in. I think it has 6 police officers off the top of my head. There's probably hundreds of people in this town that are on EBT. And there's no way 6 riot police, by the way, they'd be dropping everything else they're doing just to control these things. I don't think the numbers are out there once this thing starts, right? What do you think about that?
No, that's a good, I love this question because my colleagues and I and some of the municipal guys we work with, we have this conversation all the time. And I will tell you that if let's say that they turn them off, right? There's a big storm cloud coming, the lightning inside the clouds. And then they turn it off. That's when the lightning strikes. There's no holding back the amount of people who are on government housing that have maybe a part-time job or a very minimum wage job that rely on some of the benefits that our tax dollars provide. And I get it. Some people are trying to get off their. Most people that are on government housing will stay on government housing. You have a very small percentage that are just on government housing or food stamps or EBT, and they're trying to get their lives back together, and they do get off, but it's less than 10%, and that's a guess, but it's minimal in my experience. So let's say that the light switch gets turned off, and now there's no more EBT, and there's all these riots, and bro, I'm telling you, there's no cops, because we'll be getting assaulted, right? If there's 5 or 6 cops standing in front of a Fred Meyer or a Safeway. You're not stopping the horde, man. You're not. And you know what? When it comes down to it, all they're doing is stealing food. I'm not going to sacrifice my life for food. I'm not going to stand in the way. That's dumb.
Well, you know, and you bring up a good point because, and I know you've read the books 299 Days, and I know you know my view of how civilians would step in and become basically the police force. They would patrol, they would catch bad guys and even provide trials and even, you know, jail people. So you've got, I think, in normal criminal situations, civilians can step in and do this. I see the exact opposite in riots. I don't see how you could have enough people to just step in and be riot police. First of all, I'm not trained and I don't have less than lethal weapons. If you get a bunch of guys like me and Shelby on the West Coast, everybody, guys means men and women. Anyway, you get a bunch of people like me and Shelby. The only way we're going to try to control a riot is with small arms fire. And that's terrible. I mean, that's a bad idea. All you're doing at that point is killing people in mass. Now, if you have to defend yourself, you do. But you're right. I can't imagine rallying 250 dudes to go, you know, protect a grocery store and end up killing hundreds of people. I just don't see, I'm not doing that. And I don't see anybody else doing that. So you're right. I mean, the riot aspect, the riot, and we're kind of blending into looting at this point, the riot and looting thing is just, without the police, is an uncontrolled thing. And I think people need to understand there are not enough police officers to take care of this problem. There are barely enough now before a collapse. And it's just going to be just mayhem and everything else. Well, do you have any thoughts you'd like to add about riots before we go on to roadblocks?
Yeah. So one quick thing, you wouldn't have time unless you have, unless your town where you live, which is beautiful, by the way, you would, unless you had a pre-plan, unless the mayor and the chief, and maybe the county all had this great plan. If this is what happens, this is how we're going to do it. Unless you had a plan, you're not going to stop it, man. Like I'm telling you. So if they turn off EBT cards, or severely limit the amount on the EBT cards, the looting is going to happen so fast that it'll overwhelm government in days. And you're right. I'm not going to stand in front of a grocery store and start shooting people because all they want is food. It's not going to happen.
So on that note, I just recommend to, I'm sitting here listening to this, Keegan, and I'm like, this is book one of my book series, A Great State. People started rioting and protesting over, and they started doing violent, awful acts. And it just continued to devolve from there. So yeah, I'm sitting here going, yay, I got my stuff accurate. I'm excited. So the next point that we want to talk about in all of this sort of chaosness, new word.
That is a new word. That's awesome.
Very proud of myself. The concept of roadblocks, and roadblocks are good and bad depending on the situation. But I am seeing, and you mentioned it a little bit, but there's footage out there, riots in Portland. I always reference that because that's the hotbed of them. By the way, by the time this is aired, there will have been another riot in Portland. So we'll see what kind of new news and information that we can glean from that. But roadblocks, and you mentioned it earlier, just kind of having, you know, Antifa people standing at a corner saying, you can't go that way. And footage of this. No. And honestly, I'm going to ask you this. Police standing down. Portland police were told to stand down and not intervene on this. And I'd love to know your thoughts on that. But roadblocks, tell us how that is used and why. And why does Antifa find the need to stick people at a corner and just kind of boss drivers around town? They can't go place. I mean, what the heck?
Well, they do that because they can. When you have, we'll talk about Portland. They do that because they can. Unless you have someone ready to stand up to a group of people, and when I say someone, it better be more than one, because obviously numbers count, unless you're Bruce Lee or some ninja. So we'll talk about roadblocks. First, we'll talk about Antifa, and then maybe talk about law enforcement roadblocks, which we do not do in this state because of Article 1, Section 7. So roadblocks, a protesting or a rider's roadblock, all they're trying to do is control access for really law enforcement, not necessarily citizens. If they block up enough citizens, obviously law enforcement in their cars can't get there. But when you have citizens or civilians letting the protesters block the intersections, they're going to take the intersection. They're going to own it, and you can't get through. The reason, I know how you said the Portland police are standing down. The reason that Portland is on fire right now, and why there are so many protests in Portland is because the Seattle area, the Puget Sound area, said enough's enough. So when we, like 3 or 4 years ago, our whole civil disturbance unit down in the Pierce County went up to help Seattle on a May Day, and we crushed them. They couldn't do anything. I think there was very little damage. That's when they threw the Molotov cocktail at us and hit my buddy in the leg. There was nothing. They did absolutely nothing. We shuttled them everywhere they wanted to go. We said no, and we shuttled them down to a grocery store, and then like, okay, this is stupid. We're at a grocery store. We can't get out. And we did like blocked them everywhere they wanted to go. We guided them where we wanted them to go out and to South Seattle, and then they just fizzled off. And then every year since then, it's been Portland. So roadblocks work if you do it in a manner where you're trying to guide them out of the city. But again, you have to, one, have enough manpower, and two, the guys we were guiding out, the guys and girls we were guiding out, they didn't have enough will. Mindset's huge. If you can intimidate someone not to go down this street, they're not going to go down that street. But if they want, if Antifa wanted to, they could have taken any right direction they wanted to. If they had, because they had force at certain points, they had more people than we did. They just didn't want to get hit with pepper balls and sting balls and all that other stuff. So
I love this. I'm going to jump in here and say,
yeah,
good on you, South Sound, Puget Sound, that whole area, for doing that, because you had enough, and you guys got, everyone got like-minded, got the mindset together. I want to say this for those of you living in Portland, it takes a will. So when you have your Portland mayor, and I talk about this a lot, and again, I'm saying this, I know we're very Northwest centric here. This is spreading. This Antifa movement is spreading to other cities. So I'm trying to, you know, give everyone an inoculation for what's coming. You have a mayor that lets these people in Portland do this and says, you know what, we live in a, he said this, we live in a culture of, you're going to have to just get used to it. He said that. Obviously, that police force is not going to be able to do what they did in Seattle. So, and as a result, everyone that's in Seattle that would normally do violence there are going to, now they're all really concentrated in Portland. And honestly, Seattle and, I'm sorry, San Francisco, Berkeley, and Southern California. So, wow, that's kind of cool. Yeah, Glenn, you have a thought?
Yeah, here's the thing. And I've spoken with a lot of guys like you, and I ended up finding out the answer to this. It was counterintuitive, but a lot of people out there are going to be stuck with this intuitive thing, and that's what. And then it involves roadblocks. A lot of folks out there are probably thinking, okay, I'm going to bug out, and I'm going to go on Google Maps, and I'm going to find three routes out of town. And most people that we're talking to live in at least a suburban area, and they're probably going to a rural area. And that's very rational when you're planning a trip to grandma's, and you can do that. One of the things that I didn't initially appreciate is expect all the roads to be blocked one way or another. It could be because Antifa's controlling stuff. It could be because law enforcement has said, nobody's going through here. You talked about how you guys would sort of corral the protesters. I can see, and here's a question for you. I can see in a big emergency event, the authorities, and I'm even going to say probably legitimately too, the authorities saying, this bridge is closed. This intersection is closed. Tell us about, and no details because I'm not interested in finding out specific stuff, but is law enforcement going to be blocking roads when this sort of stuff heats up? And how does that affect bugging out?
The horse in the room, obviously, right? So we have, in the Puget Sound area, which sucks, we have only a couple major thoroughfares that go north and south, right? That we have I-5, 405 up north. What else is up north? 167, Military Road, Pack Highway. There are... Only a few major thoroughfares going north and south. And so when I-5 is backed up, what do? You go over to Military Road, or you go over to South Tacoma way. You go over these roads that are the basically the backups to the major thoroughfare, which is I-5. If you control one major thoroughfare, you're going to clog up the other major thoroughfares, and then you clog up, and then you start putting checkpoints, not intermittently, or I'm sorry, not all over the place, but just intermittently, which causes even more backup. I mean, you know, because you used to live down in Olympia, that the morning commute going north or south in the morning is horrible, and going south, I'm sorry, north in the morning and south in the evening is horrid. And then if you put checkpoints, not checkpoints, if you put roadblocks, all you have to do is put concrete blocks on certain on-ramps and off-ramps, you funnel, or you corral, as you put it, cars off onto these secondary roadways, which then you can put, if you wanted to, you could set up checkpoints, and every car that goes through, you get looking, if you're looking for someone, right? If you're on the, what's the name of the list you were on? Person of interest list, right?
POI.
Yes, POI. So all you have to do is start checking IDs. And nowadays we have facial recognition software, which is not as cool as everybody thinks it is, and very, very difficult to use. And there's no handheld things. It's all camera related. The conspiracy theory tinfoil hat people will say, no, you have it on your phones. No, we don't. If the technology is out there, eventually we'll get it. But that's how you catch people that you're trying to look for. So checkpoints and roadblocks.
You just transition from roadblocks into checkpoints. A point I'd like to make, and I'd like to get your thoughts, is I see three kinds of checkpoints. One would be law enforcement checkpoints that you mentioned,
yes,
which
mm-hmm.
people are going to have to go through. They're going to be at the choke points. Another kind of checkpoint I see would be basically insurgent communist Antifa bad guys
doing blockades
doing these things,
yeah.
And they're looking for, by the way, they're looking for NRA stickers on trucks, and
which
I yes take those
which,
off
yes
please.
Which I'm glad you took yours off when I told you to.
Yes, exactly, I did. No, but seriously, and so then you got bad guys doing it. I also see the third category is going to be good guys running checkpoints, and I guess that doesn't affect us because we're good guys and presumably can prove that. I don't know how you do it, but at least you're going to have the roadblock stuff. So, and by the way, you were in another country and there were a lot of checkpoints. What are some things people need to think about when it comes to checkpoints? How do you go through them? Do you try to avoid them? I mean, just tell us, like, when you're rolling up and, oh my goodness, the brake lights come on in the car ahead of you. Oh geez, it's a checkpoint. Tell us your thoughts.
So I'll answer that question, but I want to get that. So you talked about Antifa or good guy checkpoints. So law enforcement checkpoints aside, the Antifa checkpoints, they're not going to be permanent. They're going to be hasty, quick checkpoints, like going in there, stop like four or five cars, check them, whatever they're looking for. And the reason they'll be hasty is because let's just say that law enforcement's still doing their job, right? We haven't all gone home, which is a whole nother topic. We're going to get word that, hey, these guys are setting up a checkpoint, so we're going to haul ass over there, hopefully, and catch them. Or obviously, by the time we get there, they'll probably be gone, and traffic will be flowing. I believe the good guy checkpoints will be the same exact way. And it depends on what part of the collapse you're talking about. But in the beginning, the only checkpoints that are going to be run are law enforcement, if we're even doing checkpoints. But hasty checkpoints, whether they're Antifa dudes, whether they're Patriot dudes, whether they're gang trying to take money and guns or whatever valuables you have, because they do that sometimes nowadays. Now transitioning into your question about overseas, we ran several checkpoints which were dangerous because they were always hasty, because if you had a set checkpoint, eventually you're going to get an IED guy walking through or a V-bed driving through. So they had to be hasty, and they were only there for 5 or 10 minutes, and then we'd move off, because if you didn't, you'd end up getting a car bomb. And the things you're looking for are, when we did checkpoints, we were searching everything, and we're looking for guns, and we had a what you call POI list. We had a POI list of faces and names and stuff like that we're trying to locate. So.
Wow. And we have about 2 minutes.
Okay.
I'll just introduce the topic of curfews. We're going to end up talking about this in the after show. Once again, the regular show, we always run out of time, and a lot of the good stuff happens in the after show for Patreon. what are some things in a minute or two that people should think about when there's, let's say, a curfew, like the government says, too much rioting, too much crazy stuff going on, no one can be out after dark? How does that affect preppers? What's the deal with that?
So really quick, it's impossible. You can't. Well, let's talk about where we're at right now, right? If you're in a smaller town, like say Sandpoint, like you were talking about earlier, that inland or the panhandle thing, that's easy to enforce, right? But if you're in the Puget Sound area, it's impossible. You have limited officers. Let's say you have a block watch. If I'm walking from your house, let's say I'm up in your neck of the woods. I'm walking from your house to my house, right? And there's a watch group or a block watch group or whatever you want to call it. And they say, hey, man, there's a curfew. You're not supposed to be out. And I'm just going to tell you to pound sand and keep walking home, right? Obviously, the criminal element's either going to, one, run away, or two, assault whoever's there. But our area is too big to enforce a curfew. It's just too big. You can't.
And that's what I was thinking, too, that and in about 30 seconds here, the government can say there's a curfew, and I expect them to. And I think that all kinds of nice, good people will be deterred by that, and they will stay in their homes.
The civilized people?
Yes, the civilized people. They will stay in their homes. And I think the criminal element will be running wild, completely undeterred. And also, patriots, if you're hearing this, and you are, don't be afraid of curfews because they're unenforceable. Shelby, take us out.
So I always like to leave everybody with our final thought. Famous last words from Benjamin Franklin: failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Everyone have a great week and come join us over on the after show.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.